to another mathematical physics seminar. We're very lucky today to have Alexander Shapiro from the University of Edinburgh, who will be telling us about quantum groups, clusters, and Hamiltonian reduction.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be in Perimeter once again. And yeah, thanks to the organizers that you kind of accommodated my talk on such a short notice. So I'd like to tell some story that, in a sense, will be kind of preaching to a choir, because I think I discussed it with David, five years ago or more, and he explained to me something that it took me 5 years to understand what he was talking about. So I'll kind of try to tell you something about it. And it's based on some of my conversations with Misha Birstein, Philip DeFrancesco, David Ivanip, Renatke Demon-Gastrader, and a few more who I might have forgotten. So I'm not going to present any sort of new exciting results, but rather just tell you a few topics that I'm interested in lately. So let's keep it in the format of a conversation. If you have any questions, ideas, please just interrupt me anytime. Right, so I really want to talk about representation theory of the quantum group. So let's say this thing is a quantum group. And representations I was interested in for a few years already is the so-called positive representations. So maybe a few things to know about these is that, well, they're modeled on some Schwartz subspace inside rapidly decaying functions. And then, if you want to know how kind of quantum group acts on the subspace, you embed this quantum group into algebra of q difference operators on this Rn. And this lambda over here, it's a positive real number that encodes the central character. So these representations are very much sort of in the spirit close to principal series representations of universe enveloping algebra. Indeed, you can think of those as kind of representations on functions on sort of L2 functions or some subspace of that.
What is N?
N here is dimension of G mod B.
Canonically, is it Rn?
It is Rn because really this Rn, or maybe I can actually write what this Rn is. This Rn is the totally positive part of G mod B. So this is totally positive part. Right, so totally positive means that if you have a matrix, totally positive means you ask that all the minors of this matrix are positive.
This is
just a ball. Yeah, this is just Rn.
It does have unique canonical set of coordinates.
Probably does not.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it a red.
Oh, okay. Right. So why am I interested in these?
Yeah, the measure is interesting. The measure is not just the D. Is it just the X?
The measure here is just the X, yeah.
Are there any finches or anything? Mm? The cluster.
Yeah. In this picture, it's just the X. Yeah. I mean, yes. There is Kleinian measure, but it's sort of on the other side of the story. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, you're going to get two copies of the R. You're going to get two copies of the quantum group acting on the
thing. There will be two copies of the quantum group, so I'll. Yeah. All right. Let me mention it on the next. Yeah. I don't want to talk about the second copy, but we can if there's interest. All right. So let me kind of tell a couple things about properties. These representations, so why would anyone be interested in those? Well, first, they're closed under tensor products. Kind of conjecturally always, but really sort of this is proven for G of type A.
What's lambda exactly here? So lambda is
it? Lambda is a positive real number. And it labels central character, and I'll show an example what.
It's not a SL2, right? So it's a 2.
Oh, yeah, right, sorry. Yeah, okay, good. Right. lambda is in the positive Weyl chamber inside R to the rank. Right. So this is Weyl chamber, positive Weyl chamber.
And the Schwarz space is it the standard Schwarz space or
atomic? I'll tell what it is. So maybe I can tell now. So you embed a quantum group inside this algebraic key difference operators. You try effect on L2. Obviously, key difference operators do not preserve L2. So you just take the maximal domain of UQG, and this is your Schwarz subspace.
So it's not equal to the usual Schwarz space. Where it is?
No, I don't think so. No. Right. They're closed under standard product. There is braiding on those, meaning that our matrix from the quantum group just acts permuting these representations. And there's another thing that I find kind of very convincing is SL2's action on the following space. So it's direct integral over, well, R to the rank. Over positive Weyl chamber rather, of P lambda tensor. P minus lambda, and indeed here you have to take some kind of measure. So this is Scalian measure here.
Sorry, when I say closed under tensor product, what does this mean? It means that if you take tensor product of such things, you get what?
You get a direct integral of such things tensor multiplicity space.
Direct integral.
You get a direct integral, yes. And well, direct integral is obviously just a kind of replacement for direct sum for you know spaces like L2.
When you say choose the action, what do you mean? What is it?
On this space.
Okay.
And why I find this interesting is because, if you wish, you can think of it as a vector space labeled by, well, to be simple objects in. You know, if I could define a category of these representations, I would say, well, these P lambdas are simple objects. We have a vector space labeled by P lambdas. It kind of reminds me of, you know, SL2's action on the K-naught of the category. But again, this is just an intuition, at least at this moment. And, I'd say that this thing is a candidate for, I don't know how to call it, but maybe continuous modular category.
I see. To see, you mean like the
Like
the S and T matrices.
Yeah, exactly. And well, obviously that's wishful thinking at the moment, but still. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, but I don't know how to take direct integrals. I mean, if you work with L2, I know how to what means take direct integral. If you work with actual spaces, but if station kind of is algebraic, I mean, if you're not working with completed spaces, then I don't know what direct integral means. For example, when you take direct integral, usually it's by definition means to ignore sets of measure zero.
Correct.
And so when you say that this thing is closed on tensor product, for example, it doesn't mean it's actually ignoring sets of measure zero or not. Or is there some statement?
That's a good question. I don't think I need to ignore the.
For example,
I need to ignore.
Are these representations irreducible, for example, for all lambda?
They are, yes.
For every lambda.
For every lambda. They are reducible. If you want to say reducible, you need to define what reducible is. Irreducible, not obviously, they will have.
Will they have some kind of Fréchet type topology?
I'll skip that. They are definitely not reducible in the sense that they do have subspaces on which subspaces preserved under the action of UQG. Up to completion, they are irreducible. If you want to complete this subspace, of course, you get the whole thing. And maybe I'll tell one other property here that I think maybe. Let's see. Four. Really, this P lambda is a module for what's called modular double of the quantum group. Modular double of UQG. So this modular double is more or less kind of UQG tensor, you Q check G check, where this G check is a Langevin's dual and this Q check is just some other other parameter. And if you ask for all the operators, bounded operators that commute with this thing, they're only constants. So irreducible in that sense.
So it's not the
Drinfeld
double.
This is not the
Drinfeld
double.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it means that in particular, that if you consider only one copy, they're very much not reusable.
Yes, correct. Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, what's P sub minus lambda?
P lambda is isomorphic to P sub minus lambda. For lambda, well, you take a lambda positive chamber, you take lambda elsewhere. P lambda is isomorphic to P minus lambda, and there is certain you can define a form to make these things dual to each other.
You really mean minus lambda, not W zero lambda?
I really mean.
You can mean yeah,
right. I probably mean minus W zero lambda. Yes, you're right. Thank you. Okay, good. Yeah, very good. Right, and and another sort of wishful thinking here, well, okay, I don't know physics, but words that people usually kind of say here is something like non-compact Chern-Simons theory. I don't want to comment on that, but I'll kind of will hopefully become clear at some point why I wanted to put that on the board. So this representation theory should really tell you something about this non-compact version of Chern-Simons theory. Okay. And, well, the tool, it happens so that the convenient tool to study these representations is so-called cluster algebra. I'll have to spend maybe 10 minutes talking about that. So cluster structure on UQG. And I don't want to give a definition, but I rather want to just show you a couple of formulas and kind of explain how it works for maybe UQSL2. So quantum cluster structure is the following thing. Well, before even talking about that, let me kind of tell you what how I like to think about SL2. So let's say we fix G to be SL2. So first I want to define Drinfeld double of the Borel, which is just UQSL2, but with two copies of the Cartan. So you have k and you have k prime, both with inverses, and the following correlations. So k equals q square ek, kf equals q to the minus 2fk, e and f. A commutator of that is q inverse minus q times k minus k prime. And that tells you that k prime just behaves as k inverse should. So k prime is q to the minus 2e. K prime, K prime F is Q square F K prime, and K prime commute. So this is the Drinfeld double of the Borel. Maybe let me write that. So it's kind of double of UQB. And then quantum group, UQSL2, is just this D modulo relation KK prime equals 1. So this is indeed KK prime is a Casimir, so you can just mod out by this relation. Right. So obviously, in high rank, you'll have slightly more complicated relations. You'll have several relations there. And the first thing that you expect from the cluster structure in the quantum group is that you can find Q commuting generators for the quantum group. That you will not be able to do, but you'll be able to find Q-commuting generators for some localizations of the quantum group. So let me do that. So I'll be drawing quivers, and when I draw a quiver like that, for now you can ignore the square nodes and the round nodes, just think of them as just nodes. When I draw a quiver like that, I mean that I have an algebra over Russian functions of Q with Q commuting generators Y1 and its inverse up to Y4 and its inverse and relations Q to the epsilon JK YJ YK equals q to the epsilon kj yk yj, where epsilon jk is just number of arrows from node j to node k minus number of arrows from node k to node j. So in this example, you'll have yj, yj plus 1 equals q to the minus 2 yj plus 1 yj for j in z mod 4z, and yj, yj plus 2 just commute. And then if you have that, you can actually define a homomorphism, actually an injective homomorphism from the Drinkwine double of the Borel to that algebra. So there is injective homomorphism, phi subscript quiver q, from Drinkwine double of the Borel to this algebra, which takes e to y1, 1 plus q, y2, f to y3, 1 plus q, y4, k to q square, y1, y2, y3, k prime to q square, y3, y4, y1. There's some nice combinatorics to it. Indeed, you kind of travel along this side of the quiver, you see e and k, and e is telescopic sum, and k is just a product of all these things. Then travel along this side, you get f and k prime. Same thing, and then you can mod out by k, k prime equals 1. Product of these six variables will be Casimir, so you can just mod out by that. Right. And as soon as you have that embedding, you can define a representation of the quantum group. So how you're going to do that? Well, really, what this quantum torus is just exponentiated Heisenberg algebra. And you can just take a representation of the Heisenberg algebra, where half of it x by x and half of it by d over dx, or in this case, e to the x and d to e to the d over dx, and pull that back to the quantum group. So let me show you how this works in this example. So positive representations. So let's fix q to the e to the pi ib square. B is a real number, but b squared doesn't have to be rational. So we're on the unit circle, but not necessarily at roots of unity. And for simplicity, let's assume that we're not at roots of unity. And then we'll send yj to e to the 2 pi b y lowercase j, where these y lowercase j are indeed generators of the Heisenberg algebra. So commutator of yj and yk is 1 over 2 pi I is square root of minus 1, epsilon jk. And if you have, so with that, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to write out these lowercase y's as some linear combinations of some x's and d over dx's so that they satisfy this relation and just pull back to the quantum group. So one such thing you could do is you could set, for example, y1 to be p plus lambda over 2, so this is y1. This is
polarization.
Yeah, this is literal polarization, yes. X minus lambda. Yes, I mean, the reason I'm writing this almost explicitly is because when I will be talking about fine dimensional representations, I will actually just need to set variables to something very specific. Right, so here, so what did I do here? My adjacency matrix, this matrix epsilon, it has, it's 4 by 4 matrix, it has rank 2, so I have just one copy of x and d over dx, and I have two Casimirs, but one of these Casimirs is killed because what I want to have a representation not of the double of the Borel, but rather of UQSL2, so I made sure that kk prime will be equal to 1. That's why I just have one parameter lambda.
So you're using the fact that the graph is bipartite, right?
Mm?
You need your quiver to be bipartite, right?
No, why?
Polarization.
No, I don't need it to be bipartite. Why?
But then I'm confused about how you define polarization.
Well, I mean, in this case it's easy. In this case, I can just write one down. But in general, the quiver absolutely does not have to bipartite, and I can still cook up some.
But then I'm confused because you're choosing. Aren't you choosing a polarization somehow? So that means that kind of Lagrangian.
No, I am, but if the quiver is more complicated, I can still, So all these curves will be kind of, they will have a line of symmetry and they can define.
For instance, what happens if the number of vertices is not even?
They will, you will have a plus another Casimir. But that's not an abstraction. I mean, here I have even number of vertices and still not, it can Poisson not symplectic. Yeah. But you can always find a polarization. But the, right, so.
How does this quiver relate to SL2? How would I guess this?
How do you get that this is what I should assign to SL2?
Yeah.
Ah, very good. I'll explain that maybe in another 10 minutes, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe I can give a preview. UQG, on Poisson level, just the Poisson dual to the standard group, you can think of it as certain moduli space of local systems on a specific surface, kind of puncture disk to mark points. And on these surfaces, we know cluster structure from Fogonchirov story. And for SL2, that's what they prescribe us to do. Right. So explicitly, formulas will be as follows. So E here will be something like E to the 2 pi B P plus lambda over 2 times 1 plus q e to the 2 pi b x minus lambda. And surely you can write formulas for everything else. K, for example, will be just e to the 2 pi b x. And Casimir will be e to the 2 pi b lambda plus e to the minus 2 pi b lambda. And in that sense, lambda tells you the central character of representation. And of course, if you change lambda to minus lambda, well, for SL2 and for SLN, lambda 2 minus W of lambda, you get the same representation. Right, of course. But then, of course, you can change polarization. Let me draw some other. What do I have here? Minus x plus lambda, p plus x, x, and I don't know, minus p minus x, minus 2 lambda. So I can change polarization like that. And the two representations that I will be getting from here will be unitary equivalent because, so kind of representation from here, you get a unitary equivalent representation. Because if you take e to the pi I p square and conjugate a function of x with that, you really just get the function of f of x plus p, right? Where p is 1 over 2 pi I d over dx. Right, so if you want to change polarization, you're just literally conjugating by Gaussian. So that this way you get unitary equivalent representations. So they do not, up to unitary equivalence, they do not depend on polarization. But still, they do depend on the quiver we've chosen so far. So let's remove that as well. You can take a different quiver.
What to be independent of the quiver?
The representation we get is independent of the choice of polarization up to unitary equivalence. If you want to change polarization, you just conjugate your operators by a bunch of Gaussians, and you arrive at different polarization.
But then you want something to be independent of the quiver.
I want this representation to be also independent of the quiver.
But
well,
the representation of what? Your algebra depends on.
The localization of the algebra depends on. I embedded UQG into that quiver. I can embed as well UQG in a different quiver.
Oh.
And pull back from a different quiver. And what I am saying is that this representation will only depend on the mutation class of the quivers, but not on a particular one. I'm still explaining what you expect from a cluster structure. And let me give another example of the quiver. Here you can still define an embedding. So I can define an embedding and play all the same game, get a different pull back, get different representation of the quantum group. But these two representations will once again be unitary equivalent. Well, for example, if I choose, let me choose some convenient polarization. So let me choose polarization that here I have p plus lambda over 2 still, right? So here e just goes to e to the 2 pi b p plus lambda over 2. And this formula and this formula are related. So one is related to 2. Via conjugation by quantum dialogue, by some special function, quantum dialogue of that label here, x minus lambda, where this thing is Fadyaev's quantum dialogue. So this Fadyaev's quantum logarithm is, you can think of it as a Paul-Gummer symbol, if you wish, or so it satisfies all the same relations. In reality, it's actually a ratio of two Paul-Gummer symbols. Right. So in the general picture, and hope I'll be done with cluster stuff at this moment, general picture is as follows. So you have your quantum group, and you can embed it into one quantum torus. You can embed it into another quantum torus. So here I write, so I can take quiver, and I can do some local transformations on the quiver called cluster mutations. So for example, to get this quiver from that one, I have to take that one and mutate at vertex 2. You see, top part of the quiver is not changed, but the bottom one is changed. I took the vertex 2, I reversed all the arrows, and completed this thing to an oriented triangle. That's what I, well, that's how a mutation looks like. It doesn't really matter the precise form of it. And I can take a query, I can mutate, and I get a unitary equivalent representation. So here, to go from one to another, you conjugate by quantum dialogue of yk. Now this axon representation p lambda q, that axon representation p lambda mu of q. And here, and if you conjugate operators by something, then clearly you just act by the something on vectors of your representation, and this is a literal change of basis. That's how this works. Right. I guess I'm done.
It makes sense to ask on what space of functions are you considering your representation.
Very good. Yeah, I'll say that in a second.
For instance, you're saying that your quantum torus has a canonical representation.
I do have that my quantum torus has a canonical representation, yes. And so does my quantum group, as soon as I fix central character. Now, this p lambda is the following thing, is just maximal domain of UQG inside L2 functions of X with the usual Lebesgue measure, L2 functions of R with the usual Lebesgue measure, where UQG acts by these formulas. And you can ask, does that even contain anything? But yes, it does. And for example, you can choose functions of that sort, the minus alpha x squared plus beta x times some polynomial of x, where alpha is positive, beta is any complex number, and p of x is a complex polynomial. So these set of on this set of functions, you act, no problem, and this thing is dense inside your maximal domain. Right. Now,
sorry, can I ask you a formula for the Casimir set? So you're writing it's sum of two exponentials, but what is lambda here? I mean, lambda is, I mean, it's a number, but it's regarded as an element of what in terms of your variables, like capital Y's.
X and P, or what?
So to say, or Y's. I mean, I don't.
Well, know. I mean, I would say, I want to act on functions of x. I write my operator in terms of multiplication by x, or e to the x rather, by multiplication by e to the, by acting by e to the d over dx, and lambda is just a constant. So as soon as I fix the constant, I got a representation. For different constants, these representations will be different for the same.
So this is just a Pareto of multiplication by a constant.
Yeah.
But then, sorry, I'm confused, but if you multiply by another constant and get multiplication by a different constant, then you get multiplication by sum of the constants.
Yes.
Yes. So this whole thing is just multiplication by a constant.
Yes.
Oh, this is how you define it. But as an element of the, isn't it easy to say what is an element of this algebra?
The Casimir.
Yes.
Of course. But sorry.
I mean, no, of the one of yours.
Sure.
No, what are you going to write now? I understand.
I mean, I can write it through quantum torus, yes. It's I
keep forget.
Something like, I think it, sorry, let me put a question mark. Something like this.
And so this thing will act by a constant.
Well, yeah, precise. Yeah, exactly. But you can see that, right? If you take y1 by 3, p's cancel out and you get e to the lambda. And if you take the sum of all these, you take e to the minus lambda. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. All right. Now, and surely you don't need to know anything about clusters to define these representations, and that's how they were defined in the first place. Ivan and Igor Frankl, they just wrote explicit formulas for these. And the way they wrote these explicit formulas, they kind of took the formulas for principal series and applied something called Mellin transform. Just last word I'm going to say about clusters is sort of why bother about clusters. And the answer is, you can, for example, if you want to decompose a tensor product of P lambda tensor P mu, right? What you do is you need to diagonalize. Need to diagonalize delta of the Casimir, right? Because that thing has to act by scalars. How do you diagonalize that? Well, you do it in two steps, right? So first, you choose cluster in which it's simple, where delta of C is simple. And in fact, you can find a cluster in which it's a Hamiltonian of open to other systems, so something very well known. And second, we'll diagonalize that simple thing. Diagonalize the letter. Okay. This cluster structure gives you a bunch of kind of combinatorial pool of unitary transformations, unitary changes of basis. If you don't like how your operator looks in one, you can always change it to the other, and you have some combinatorics of quivers guiding you, allowing you to guess in which cluster your operator will take the simpler form.
But for this, you need to say one more thing, because a tensor product has to do with co-multiplication, right?
Yes.
And so you have to say what co-multiplication means in terms of this cluster.
Yeah, that I can say, but maybe let me not do it now. This is just an ad. I can't tell how it works, and I can't tell how braiding works in terms of clusters, but maybe, yeah, we can discuss that later. And let me maybe just put one more formula here, something that, of course, everyone knows. So what you'll end up doing is having a Clebsch-Gordan map from P lambda tensor P mu to direct integral of P nu times multiplicity space, d some measure of nu, right? So this thing here is Clebsch-Gordan map. Now, the cool thing about clusters is that this Clebsch-Gordan map can be written just absolutely explicitly as an integral kernel, as an integral operator. Kernel of this operator would be some product and ratios of quantum Del algorithms, some special function. So really, you just need to know one special function to know all this theory. It's kind of nice. But then can you actually see finite dimensional representations, and can you, for example, use this cluster technique to study finite dimensional representations? Why would they ever do that? Well, for example, honestly, I don't know how interesting that problem is, but there is a whole industry, you know, people writing out Clebsch-Gordan and Rucker-Wigner symbols, 3J and 6J symbols for finite dimensional representations. They do not have multiplicity. People know how to do it for SLN, I think, at the moment, but But here you just have a closed formula for everything. Right? So you would like to maybe see how fine dimensional representations fit into this picture. And one way you'd guess how they fit is as follows. Well, if these representations kind of an analog of principal series, so you act on L2 functions or short subspace, L2 functions in G, on G mod B, then if you want finite dimensions, you really should act on some sections of line bundles on G mod B. So that, I have to be honest, I don't know how, well, I don't know how to tell this in terms of clusters, but I have a different picture allowing you to speak about finite dimensionals. And this different picture I would like to explain. So, if you have a finite dimensional representation, what do you need? Well, you need that E has the operator E for SL2, for example, it has a kernel. And since there's highest weight vector, there's E applied to this vector is equal to zero, right? So you need a highest weight vector. So E applied to V is equal to zero. What does it mean? Well, it really means that you have this operator that we've written. If the 2 pi b x minus lambda applied to some function f of x is equal to zero. And you'd like to find solution to this equation. So first of all, let me tell you that when you look for, if you have an operator, you're looking for eigenfunctions for an operator, and you work with this Schwarz subspaces and so on, it's very often that eigenfunctions, that eigenvectors for operators that you find, they're not part of your eigenspace, but they're what's called tempered distributions. So they're part of the dual space, which is sort of not too far from your original one. And that happens in this case. So first of all, obviously, this operator is invertible, because you can change polarization and make it just multiplication. This obviously invertible, right? Same thing as asking that 1 plus e to the 2 pi b, and let's see what we can write. So I would like to incorporate q inside here, and what I will get is x minus lambda minus cb. I'll tell what this constant is, f of x, where cb here is I over 2 b plus b inverse. This is some coupling constant in the Liouville theory.
You might have put
a
minus then.
Sorry?
You might want a minus instead of I.
I want minus, yeah, thank you. Yeah, exactly. Right.
What is your assumption on Q here? Is Q real or is Q?
Q is on the unit circle. Q is on the unit circle.
Unit circle, but you probably don't want roots of unity, right?
Everything survives if I want roots of unity, but for.
But your map from D to this quantum torus will not be injective.
This will not be injective, correct. So. Yeah, so for now, let's assume that B is real, but B squared is not a rational number. But I'm telling you that somehow, let me maybe say this, that the story, what will happen to the story if Q becomes a root of unity is that your cluster variety, which is kind of purely quantum in this case, will become, as it should, sort of, it will have a huge center. This huge center will be the usual cluster variety, and fibers will be kind of the quantum counterparts of that, kind of Azumaya algebra over the center, as usual. So that all goes smoothly through, but for now, let's assume that Q is not root of unity. Right, and so for that, you just figure out that, well, f of x is a delta function of, x minus lambda minus cb. Of course, you can add plus, let me actually use a different chalk, maybe plus ib inverse, some number k. So I can add as many ib inverse integer, IB inverse times integer as I want, just because here I will be multiplying by 1. This will matter for for the UQ check counterpart. Maybe I should also write that here. So Q check is e to the pi I b to the minus 2. So if I forget now, if I just restrict to UQ G rather than UQ check G check, then this, we can just forget about IB inverse, and let's do that. Right.
Are you going to find something which is finite dimensional of form? Which is finite dimensional representation of the modulo double?
I will find finite dimensional for the modulo double, yes. Right.
So ultimately you're going to set k to 0.
If I, so what I, right, well, yeah, I'll say just one second, right. Yeah, so So that tells me one thing, but I also want to know something about lambda as well, right? And how do I find lambda? Well, since C is e to the 2 pi b lambda plus e to the minus 2 pi b lambda, and in finite dimensional representation should be, well, q to the n plus q to the minus n for n-dimensional representation, I find lambda as lambda becomes kind of CB plus IB n minus 1 over 2 and plus this IB inverse K. Good. And then now I can talk about finite dimensional representations. So what we get, so therefore.
We put the CB in lambda, not the minus CB.
Hmm?
We put the CB in lambda, not the minus CB.
Okay. I put CB, yes. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, so at the end, what I get is the following. So n-dimensional representation of UQSL2 is supported on the following set of delta functions. Delta of x minus n minus 1 over 2 ib, delta of x minus n minus 3 over 2 ib, so on, delta of x plus n minus 1 over 2 ib. And lambda here is equal to cb plus ib n minus 1, 2. Here I did set k to 0. And what I got sort of, let me write it as, so I got sort of v, let me write vn, I don't know, q. This is a, sorry, let me write vn. This is a, this is n dimensional for uqsl2 and trivial for UQ check SL2, right? But in general, of course, I can do shifts in IB and shifts in IB inverse, and what I will get just a tensor product. So in general, so if K is not equal to zero, I get tensor product of VN tensor VK check. Or maybe not K, but
K is equal to zero.
If K is not equal to zero, yeah. Yeah.
So when it is supported on, so honestly, what basically what this means is that you can define a homomorphism of your representation by evaluating your function.
Correct. Correct. Correct.
So
precisely.
You actually don't need a delta function. So just that you're gonna. I mean, the formally speaking, however, your b lambda,
uh-huh.
And then you can have a map from it. Just well, sorry, I don't understand. So right. So you can see that just using that you can evaluate at these points.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a map into some dimensional vector space, and I say that this map.
I'm saying very simple thing. I'm saying just the UQSL2 in this case just preserves this, acts by these formulas and preserves this subset of functions. Well, this finite dimensional vector space of functions, of delta functions. Yes.
Which is naturally quotient of your.
It's not because I don't know how to talk about this really because delta functions are not even part of my short subspace.
Therefore, it's a quotient, not a sub-representation.
Yeah.
It's still evaluate functions of points.
Yeah.
So that means you have a well-defined homomorphism from your p-lambda to finite dimensional.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, means that it should.
Sorry. No. Why does I have a homomorphism? I mean, that even the central characters are different. I don't think I have a well-defined homomorphism.
But then I'm confused. I mean, what happens if you just evaluate your functions at these points? Aren't you saying?
Think of evaluation at a point as an element of the dual.
That I can, yes.
This is what delta function means.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
It means that they're kind of at this point they're not reducible. Right?
Yeah. All right.
Does that make sense when you're quotienting by something which is maybe in the kernel of a of an inner border.
Mm.
Could there be a sense for you, it's not just important, it's important by something which is in the kernel? I don't know. Could be that so is the representation P lambda unitary even when you go to these values of lambda? Because you know lambda, lambda was real, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's real because P, okay.
Yeah, and here lambda is purely complex. Here lambda is purely complex.
Yes, right, so you went away from the real lambda.
Correct,
lambda.
Correct. Oh, yes, correct. And I will draw you a picture of that in a second.
So in principle.
Oh, okay, so for I also have real lambdas, you don't have P lambdas, not both defined.
Correct.
Yes. Although like, could be lambda, this still be unitary?
I don't know. But how do you define this lambda is not real? This, you really want some kind of Schwarz space, which should be, you know, if you are in a Fourier transform and things like this.
Look,
be the
function is not the function's an imaginary value. So, at the very least, you need to switch the direction of x, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying that I don't see how to define the whole representation of P lambda if lambda is not real.
Well, so here.
No, but sorry.
Here, multiplication and shift operators, right?
But on what space?
So suppose that lambda is imaginary.
Yes. What would be the vector space? Let's forget
that. I would get the true number of functions, but on the imaginary axis instead of the real axis of I. The true of I.
But I don't think you can do it. I mean, the problem is that it will depend on polarization, I think.
I hope not. Becomes imaginary, the momentum also becomes imaginary naturally. Because you know, Fourier transform.
Okay, maybe you're right with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think the operators are obviously unitary when you do that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they're unitary.
No, definitely not unitary. It wasn't to find the space in which they still act.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good. So let me try to answer that question. Well, at least try to tell some way to talk to answer this question. So indeed, you have lambda, which is now a complex parameter, and on this axis, when you're real, right over here, real line, lambda is real, you have positive representations. So here you have positive ones. And now you have finite dimensionals at this point, so you have CB, and here you have, well, let me set K to 0 again. So here you have CB plus IBN, and here you have n-dimensional representation. Right. Of course, you can ask, well, what's P lambda for lambda generic? So that I have not thought about yet. But what you totally can do, you can ask yourself, fine, let's multiply P lambda by a two-dimensional representation and try to decompose that into reducibles. Right? And in fact, you can multiply by an n-dimensional representation. And this thing is, let me write it as a question. So this thing should be isomorphic to direct sum k from 1 to n P lambda. But shifted by n minus 2k plus 1 over 2 ib, right? So for example, if you take lambda over here, then and you multiply by a two-dimensional representation, you get lambda plus ib over 2 and lambda minus ib over 2. And one way to figure out what these things are is just literally, well, take this space of functions, find eigenfunctions for a Casimir, and you will have two eigenspaces. This you can actually do by hand, it's very easy. You can just find two eigenspaces, and, well, this one will be your space of P lambda plus IB over 2, and another P of lambda minus IB over 2. And as you can imagine, these will look like delta function of x shifted by something times everything from your Schwarz subspace for P lambda plus delta function shifted the other way, plus again every, well, kind of same function from your short subspace. Right. Answer is, so there was a question mark here. Answer is yes, but it's kind of still work in progress. So for.
Well, I think it's defined, just define a different set of representations, mm-hmm. which live on parallel lines.
Precisely. Yeah. So what you would want to do, you would want to be able, well, okay, what I would want to do is I would want to be able to pick a point on a complex plane and then say at this point I can choose one or maybe several different subspaces of all kind of distributions. And I know how, so picking a point and picking some subspace distributions defines me a representation, and then I should be able to tensor multiply those and tell how they decompose. So that would be ideal. So far we know about positive representations, we know about finite dimensionals. What I would expect is sort of kind of quantum principle series also lives on that line, but away from these points, you have discrete series living at the same points and so on.
So quantum principle series is not known?
Well, I don't know them. I don't know. So the positive ones were kind of constructed as quantum principle series, as some Mellon transform of principle series, but they are closed under tensor products, unlike principle series.
Because they're like spherical.
Yeah. And what you will see on this line is principle series, and discrete series at
when do you expect to see everywhere? I would still expect parallel lines at best.
How do you mean?
Like for a non-quantum case, right? Uh-huh. You need your representations are labeled by a real and an integer.
Oh, I see. So you expect that you only be able to see this kind of line? Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that may be right.
For this quantum dot.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I see.
Quantum principle series. If you want to find Kharshchandra modules corresponding to quantum principle series, then there's no problem. It's just.
Mm-hmm. I mean. Yeah, you can. That you can. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right.
So then the question is, what do you mean by principle? I mean, if you want to some kind of completion, then I have to figure out what kind of completion. Right. Here it's also some kind of unclear completion.
It's not the complete. Yeah.
But if you want to find sort of k finite vectors, so mm-hmm. This is, I mean, you can look just at algebraic definition of those for q equal to 1, and that survives for any q.
Yeah, because this one to be analog of the principle C representation for essential R, not for essential C.
Correct.
No, but for essential, and you can do it for any
for essential R, you still get the real an integer, or just.
In this Kharshchandra module story, you always complexify everything, so. So you just the real structure. It's just a subgroup in the complex group fixed by an involution. So you never do anything. In Kharshchandra module structure, you never do anything real. So you can actually ask the question whether for the p lambda is for real lambda, whether they actually complete completions of actual
the completion of
algebraic principle series.
But the completion of Kharshchandra gives you representations to the essential C.
No.
No?
No.
Will there be an action from the left and from the right? So.
No, it depends. If in Kharshchandra model, you can define Kharshchandra model.
A model, yeah. Not by module.
Not by
module. Not module.
So, which depends on the choice of K, which is algebraic group fixed by an involution.
Mm-hmm.
And so any real group defines a such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, and this can, you can do it for in the quantum case exactly the same way as.
And what labels are Kharshchandra modules for SF2?
It's always characters of the torus.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But for us to choose the unitary structure only.
Well, no, unitary structure is a different thing, but somehow I'm not talking about unit.
So there wouldn't be anything in the imaginary direction.
Well, as a breaker, you can take any number.
No, of course, but not the unitary.
No, I don't think.
No, no.
Can do it to be
thing, yeah. So
So I think when you write this question, you are trying to define the right-hand side.
Yeah, that's part of the question, yeah.
But what happens for the non-quantum case? What happens for the non-quantum case, right? If I take a principle series...
But I mean, there's no positive representations for non-quantum case.
Okay.
But is it literally true? I mean, this question makes more sense that take your positive representation P lambda, and then take this corresponding principle series understood as a Kharshchandra module. Is the latter a submodule of the form? And such that up to some completion they can sum. That is it a dense submodule of those some topology?
I don't know.
It wants to be the product of two Kharshchandra modules, one for.
But I mean, if you're saying that they can see, I mean, why do you say they have anything to do with a principle series?
No, I did. they were constructed in a similar way. I'm not saying any formal claim about relation between positive representations to principal series. They were constructed by literally kind of, well, spoiling formals for principal series, doing some Mellon transform, sprinkling in some cues. You can think of those as indeed, you know, you model this on L2 functions on positive part on G mod B, only in that sense. But they behave very much unlike principal series, right? Because these are closed under tensor products, and principal series are not. Let me say just a few more words about this. As I said, this for SL2, for two-dimensional representation, three-dimensional, you can just write out Casimir and just diagonalize that. You can check indeed that if you, moreover, put delta functions not like in both slots, then you can recover the usual Clebsch-Gordan coefficients as you should for fine-dimensional ones. But I think the correct idea to tackle that would be to apply your Clebsch-Gordan map, for which you have a closed formula for just from just cluster, an integral formula for that. Just apply it to functions of the form f of x1 times delta function of, well, x2 minus whatever should be there, n minus 2k plus 1 over 2ib. And that should literally spit you out the Clebsch-Gordan map for the thing. So in this sense, I hope to get Clebsch-Gordan maps for, well, you know, principal and fine dimensional, two fine dimensionals. You can do the same for Rucker-Wigner maps because you have a closed formula for those, and so on. Maybe in the last 2 minutes, can I have three? All right. In the last 3 minutes, I would like to just.
No, go ahead.
All right. I would just maybe without explaining things, but just mention a few words. That's a different way to think about that. And it's going back to Kevin's question, did I know that this is the right quiver to do for UQSL2? The answer is, there's this whole Fogg-Gontcharov story where you fix a surface, you fix a group G, and then you study some decorated, and let me not explain this word, moduli space of local systems, moduli space of G local systems on S. And what they tell you is they tell you that this thing, let me call it somehow, moduli space chi GS. So chi GS not has cluster structure, where this not means that I consider a generic monodromous everywhere. So what does it mean that I consider generic monodromous? Well, what's a moduli space of local systems? It means that I have it's just space of homomorphisms from pi 1 of the surface to the group, and I ask that all the monodromous there are generic, in generic position and so on. There is a theorem by, that's myself, another part by Evanip, and finally, the most important part by Lin Wei Shen, saying that kind of chi GSQ, so the quantized version of that moduli space for S being a disk with a puncture and two mark points. So there are two parts of this theorem. First, Drinfeld double of the Borel embeds into, well, this chi GSQ double invariance. This is a wild group. And second part of the theorem by Lin Wei is that, let me call it phi. Phi is an isomorphism for G of AD type. But conjecturally, it's always an isomorphism. It's just some, I mean, we only know how to prove it for AD. But so basically what I'm telling you is as soon as you give me a group and the surface, I can go open Fogg-Gontcharov, tell you what cluster structure I put on there. And then I have an algebra, and I have this canonical representation. But now you can ask, how do you see finite dimensional representations in there. So,
so in some sense, these positive representations are unitary, I assume.
Yes.
In some sense.
Yes.
Are the finite dimensional representations unitary?
I haven't thought about that. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'll have to think about it.
So when you start doing this tensor problem,
well, I mean, if you can say that SL2R, they're certainly not unitary.
Yeah.
Right? So just the information of that. So there's no chance for them to be.
Yeah. Well, just because finite dimensions for SL2R are not.
Yes.
No.
So this begs the question, where are you landing? Can you do this P-tensor?
Oh, you mean in there?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You're out of unitary representations.
I am out of unitary representations, yes.
Where do you live? So if you're not unitary representations, you cannot talk about the shoe. I mean, it looks like very hard to live in a world of non-unitary representations of infinite dimensional spaces.
I agree.
Spaces.
But you can definitely define the right-hand side. I can literally tell you the functions and sort of space of distributions so that this becomes an isomorphism. And indeed, this isomorphism, you just get it by applying your Clebsch coordinate.
That's confusing because the chasm, you do it by diagonalizing the chasm here,
mm-hmm.
but the chasm here is not self-adjoint.
Hmm?
The chasm here is not going to be self-adjoint because
yeah, I see.
V is not unitary. So does it really make sense to diagonalize a non-self-adjoint operator since it's very dangerous?
You mean I might be finding just some part of its spectrum, right? Not the whole thing.
If the Casimir was acting on by a scalar before, then when you tensor with a finite dimensional, it's still going to act through a finite
dimensional. But it's looking at the total Casimir now, so it's taking the generators acting on P, plus the generators acting on V, and making the Casimir out of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, this includes
the whole thing, it includes the casting of the fundamental thing, and it includes the inner product, right? Or something like that. The piece of data that is diagonalizing is made out of a combination of the E, F, and K generators on P and the ones on V. And those are not unitary.
Yeah.
But if your Casimir just has a finite spectrum,
mm-hmm.
but in this case your Casimir will just have finite spectrum.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, if I have an operating in a finite dimensional vector space, it makes sense to say that it's diagonalizable.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be unitary.
But it's acting on the whole P tensor V. The thing is diagonalizable.
Well, I think it's still be diagonalizable. See, it's an algebraic statement. It could still happen to be diagonalizable.
Yes.
You know. Okay. You're not guaranteed that it's diagonalizable, but somehow.
And
but again, I mean, you can forget about Casimir and just say that let's consider this tensor product. You know, you may hope that it's equal to, I mean, for instance, you still have the center acting, so we can just a priori decompose it with respect to generalized eigenvalues of the center. But we can hope that generalized eigenvalues are actual eigenvalues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of your diagonalizing data statement. And then I can hope that every sort of or which every sort of eigenspace of the center has the right sum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is kind of freezing.
You have a lot of control over it. I mean, there are times where it's not bad.
And for Baron models, this is what happens.
Exactly.
If you take Baron models with genericized weight,
yes.
you multiply it by the reduced representations, decomposes, so there are some of Baron models.
Yes, yes.
But if you have highest weight minus one, then you're actually
right. But here it will never happen because, you know, here somewhere, you know, it's kind of real and imaginary axis, so it's not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Sorry. So, just finishing the sentence. Right. So, what I wanted to say is that if you indeed go back to thinking about modular space of local systems, you can consider these monodromies different monodromy matrices in the space, and I labeled these L plus and L minus, and indeed they satisfy all these RLL relations as they should. These literally become L plus and L minus operators in Leningrad school description. But you can also make a cut over here. So let's say, well, I just draw a triangulation, but let me make a cut. Let me make a cut and consider a monodromy around the puncture. Let me call it M. And I can ask for M being identity, or I can ask M being Q to the N, 0, 0, Q to the minus N. And asking that is actually equivalent to asking for a highest weight vector in n-dimensional representation. So really, to see fine-dimensional representations, you just look at your moduli space of local systems, and classically, you just kill the monodromy. On quantum level, you set it to something like that. But then you can ask, fine, what if I just want non-generic monodromies? Can I do that? And the answer is yes, you can, and cluster structure survives all the time unless you literally want to kill your classically kill your monodromy completely. So do I have cluster structure? Do we have cluster structure on kind of chi-JS with non-generic monodromies? The answer is yes, really. Yes, work in progress. And you can take your monodromy matrix around punctures and ask them to be of that shape. So it's upper triangular, and then you zero the, well, you make the first k columns to be identity. And that story you get, so this you get via Hamiltonian reduction of the following. So if you start from a, not a disk with a puncture and two mark points, but rather a cylinder with two mark points on each side, you can cut it into pieces, and each of these pieces is a quantum group. You can take the quantum group and you can take a Borel inside, so quantum group acts on this thing, because it's a subalgebra. You can take a Borel and do Hamiltonian reduction with respect to Borel, and then you'll end land in the usual Fogg-Gontcharov story. You can take a parabolic, and then you'll end in this story. So if you take Maxwell parabolic, you'll only be leaving the last column. And the very last sentence is that if you want cluster structure on spherical Daha, that's literally the following. So that's, you take a cylinder with a puncture, but you require that over here, your monodromy, M. So M is precisely of this form, an identity, plus just the last column. And the cluster structure, so you have the cluster structure on the spherical Daha, but moreover, even the SL2Z action on spherical Daha is given by cluster transformations. The sad bit is that we know how SL2Z action works for, I think, SL2 up to SL7, and we still don't know the general pattern, as stupid as it sounds, but anyway. So at least if you study these moduli space of local systems with non-generic monodromies, you have access to more interesting algebras than just with generic ones.
Yes.
I guess that's it. Thank you.
Questions during the talk, and we're slightly over time, so maybe if there's a very quick question.
I had this commuting action of u check to check, and from this point of view, is p lambda equal to some p lambda check for a check?
P lambda is just, it kind of depends symmetrically on q and q check.
Well, this makes no sense because one is g and the other is g check. I'm asking, is there an isomorphism between p lambda and some p for some lambda check for g check, which respects both functions?
I mean, p lambda is a bimodule for these, right?
Right, but I'm saying that it's a bimodule constructed out of g, right? And so we can also construct.
No, it's not. It's constructed from a quiver, but the quiver will be same for g and g check.
It's literally the same for.
Oh, sorry. No, you're right, right. That's right. That you have to do something silly like invert all the arrows or something like that.
No, I mean, you can still ask the question I asked. Is it true that P lambda is isomorphic to P lambda check, for a lambda check is some weight which you check as a bimodal?
Yes. It is, of course, because the only thing that goes into the definition of P lambda is a quiver and lambda. Right? The quiver is literally the same. And lambda is literally the same, but you'll have Casimir, of course, Casimir of UQ will act as e to the 2 pi b lambda plus e to the minus 2 pi b lambda. And for check, you'll have e to the 2 pi b inverse lambda, so the minus 2 pi b inverse lambda. Just changing b to b inverse.
Okay, if you say so. I mean, the quiver is literally the same for G.
Quiver is literally the same, yes.
Even in non-simplest case.
Good question. I think so. I'll have to think about that. I'll have to think about that.
No.
Sorry. I'll have to think about that. Let me not answer at the moment. Yeah. Sorry. Well, for simple list, obviously yes. For non-simple list, yeah, I'll have to think.
And also, is it possible to say that in some sense the representation is not of the algebra but of the group?
How do you mean?
Well, that's part of the question. Does it make sense? Oh, for example, I think the following thing is well defined. There's a notion of sort of smooth, compactly supported functions on the quantum group.
Yeah.
Then if you have a representation of the group, then smooth, compactly supported. Well, consists of smooth vectors, then smooth compactly supported functions will have the algebra. So two questions, can you do it here?
Sorry, but you're just asking a question of representation about, sorry.
Yes,
like what, how can you think of the space of representation?
For usual groups, not for quantum groups. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to say that if you have a representation of the Lie algebra, you can say that it comes from a representation of the group.
Yeah.
This is a property. So I wonder if you can formulate this property here, but it's true.
But here it will be just a, you're asking whether representation of the quantum group actually comes as a co-module of OQG rather than module of UQG, right? That's the question.
No, I mean, because it's analytic, it has to be careful in the algebraic situation. It's the same being, it is the same, but how in this kind of infinite dimensional situation is not the same.
Well, okay, so I do not know answer to what you asked, but indeed there is a form of Peter Weyl theorem for these things where you can define sort of a OQG co-module structure on positive representations. This you can do. But
I actually don't believe it because if co-module of OQG is an algebraic representation of G, like in the usual case, being a co-module of functions means that it's an algebraic representation. It's only kind of finite dimensional representations this works.
So why?
This is just algebraic representation of G by definition is the same as a co-module of O for any algebraic group.
Yeah. Oh.
So you have to be really, I mean, in the infinite dimensional situation, you have to be careful about what you mean by representation of the group. And so the only way I know how you can try it is you can define some kind of convolution algebra of some kind of nice functions of the group. For example, smooth compactly supported one. Distribution, because we have power measure, they're the same. And then we want to say that this algebra distribution is.
I'll think about it. Yeah. I cannot answer at the moment.
All right. Let's finish there. It's next session again.